preternatural creature, as long as they don't cause any problems. I'd refuse to go to the Seethe without Stefan. Stubborn I might be, but not stupid. I wouldn't invite her to my house either. It's much easier to invite evil in than it is to keep it out afterwards. I wasn't even certain how you uninvited a vampire, beyond knowing that it was possible. So I'd suggested Uncle Mike's as a neutral meeting place. I'd expected it to be less crowded since it was a work night. Apparently Uncle Mike's clientele wasn't worried about getting up in the morning like I had to. I opened the door, and noise poured out like water over a dam. Caught by the sheer volume of sound, I hesitated. Then a firm hand caught my breastbone and pushed me, sending me stumbling back outside. The door swung shut, leaving me alone in the parking lot with my assailant. I took a second step back, putting space between us, wishing I'd brought a gun. Then I took a good look and relaxed. He was dressed in a Lincoln green tunic and hose, looking not unlike one of Robin Hood's merry men, the uniform of Uncle Mike's staff. He looked about 16, tall and thin, with just a faint shadow of hair about his mouth that might be a mustache in a few years. His features were ordinary, neither too big nor too small, but not neatly arranged enough to be overtly attractive. He made a little gesture at me, and I smelled the sharp, astringent scent of fey magic. Then he turned on his heel and started back to the door. He was a bouncer. Damn it all, this was the second time today someone tried to throw me out of some place. I'm not human, I told him impatiently, following behind him. Uncle Mike doesn't mind me coming here. Not that Uncle Mike had taken much notice of me. The boy hissed and turned to face me, anger darkening his features. He held his hands up between us and cupped them. This time, the smell of magic was as strong as ammonia, clearing my sinuses. I gave a choked cough at the unexpected strength of the scent. I don't know what he intended to do to me, because the door behind him opened again, and Uncle Mike himself came out.
"'St, now, Fergus, you'll not be wanting to do that, do you hear me? Put that out. Of all the... You know better than that.'
Ireland lay thick as honey on his tongue, and his voice worked its own kind of magic on the bouncer, who dropped his hands at the first word. Uncle Mike looked like a tavern owner ought to, as if he'd reached into my mind and pulled out all the tavern owners in all the books and movies and stories I'd ever experienced, and then distilled them to produce the perfect caricature. His face was pleasing, but more charismatic than handsome. He was average in height, with wide shoulders, thick arms, and short-fingered, powerful hands. His hair was reddish-brown, but there were no freckles on his tanned face. His eyes, I knew, though the night robbed them of their color, were bright hazel, and he turned their power on his hapless employee.
"'Now then, Fergus, you make yourself useful and tell Biddy she's to guard the door for the rest of the night. Then you are to go to Cook and tell him I want you to stay busy until you remember that killing customers isn't good for business.' "'Yes, sir.'
Thoroughly cowed, the bouncer scuttled through the door and disappeared inside. I might have felt sorry for him if it hadn't been for the killing customers part.
"'Now then,' Uncle Mike said, turning to me, "'you'll have to excuse my help. That demon is raising all sorts of havoc for us here, keeping tempers at a killing edge, as you have seen. I'm thinking that it might not be the best night for one of your kind to join us in revelry.'
It was more polite than a death curse, perhaps, but even more effective at keeping me out. Damn it. I swallowed my growl and tried to keep my voice as polite as his. "'If I am not welcome, would you have someone find Marcilia and tell her to meet me out here?' His face went blank with surprise.
"'And what are you doing meeting the vampire queen? You play in waters much too deep to swim in for long, little girl.'
I think it was the little girl that did it. Or maybe it was the shift in wind that brought the smell of garbage, wolf, and blood to my nose, as well as a distinct scent that was Warren's alone, reminding me that he had been dumped here, bleeding and dying, only hours ago. "'Maybe if the Fae would stir their asses once in a while, I could stay in shallow water,' I said, all attempts at politeness gone. "'I know the old stories. I know you have power, damn it all. Why are you all just sitting around and watching the sorcerer kill people?' I was trying not to include Stefan among the dead, but part of me was already in mourning. It added a reckless edge to my tongue. "'I suppose if you are afraid it might put you on a killing edge, it makes better sense to wait it out.'
Warren could have done that, too. Then he'd be safe at home instead of bleeding in Adam's guest bedroom. Especially since it is a vampire matter. The people who die along the way are merely effluvia and nothing to be concerned about. He smiled just a little, and it flamed my temper higher. Fine, smile away. I suppose you've killed your share. Well, this affects you, too. The humans aren't stupid. They know this is something out of the ordinary, something evil, and the only people they know who might do this are yours. He was grinning now, but he held up a staying hand.
Sorry, love. It's just the image. One doesn't think of mechanics using words like effluvia, does one?
I stared at him. Maybe there was something about being old, and I suspected Uncle Mike was very old, that gave him a different perspective, but...
I'm sorry, I said, and even I could hear that my voice was thick with rage. I'll try to keep to commonly used, very small words when discussing something that has a body count of what?
I tried to add it up in my head, though I was spoiled somewhat because I didn't know how many people had died while Daniel had been under the sorcerer's control.
15?
The smile left his face altogether, and he stopped looking like a tavern owner.
More like 40, I think, though I doubt not there are more we've yet to find. Not all of them here in the three cities, either. Demons deal in death and rot. Nothing to smile at nor to let pass. My apologies,
he bowed, a jerky motion that was over so quickly I couldn't be absolutely certain I'd really seen it.
I was amused as much at myself as at your use of the language. Even after all this time, I keep forgetting that heroes can be found in unlikely places and persons, like mechanics who can turn into coyotes.
He stared at me a minute, and a sly smile slid into his eyes, nothing like the expressions he usually had on his face.
So, as you have the right, being a hero about to throw yourself on a grenade for the rest of us, I'll tell you why we're not bestirring ourselves against it.
He nodded his head toward the tavern.
We Fae are holding to survival by our fingertips, Mercedes Thompson. We are dying faster than we are reproducing, even counting our half-bloods. It started the first time a human forged a cold iron blade, but bullet lead kills us just as quickly as steel ever did. Gremlins like Zebald Adalbert Smiter being the exception among us.
He paused, but I waited. I knew all of this, as did anyone who cared to turn on the TV or read a newspaper.
There are beings of power here, he said. Beings who would scare the human population into launching a genocidal wave that would wipe every Fae off the face of the earth if they knew of them. If the sorcerer turns its attention to us, makes one of us kill humans in front of cameras, which it can do, there will be no more Fae.
The werewolves are under the same constraints, I said. It hasn't stopped Adam. He could have left it all to the vampires. I bet that there are 4 people in that bar right now that could destroy this monster before it even knew they were looking for him. He clenched his fists and turned away, but not before I saw something else on his face. Something hungry.
No. You underestimate its power, Mercedes. Most of us have no more resistance to vampiric powers than any human, nor are there many souls pure enough to resist the demon. You don't want it controlling one of us.
He swung back to me, and he looked just as he always had. That instant of something more was gone, as if it had never been. I took a step back anyway, because my instincts were telling me that I wasn't the biggest predator here. His voice was mellow and easy as he told me.
But just in case someone was overly tempted to take this sorcerer on, the Grey Lords have declared this vampire business, and we are to stay out of it. The Grey Lords do consider humans to be effluvia, Mercy. Very dangerous effluvia. They are not inclined to worry over much about a few human deaths.
Looking into his eyes, I knew 3 things. The first was that Uncle Mike was one of the few who would have gone after the sorcerer. The second was that he both hated and feared the Grey Lords. The third was that he didn't consider humans to be effluvia at all. I wasn't certain which one surprised me the most. So, I said, does this mean you'll let me come in and find Marsilia myself? He nodded his head slowly.
I'll not stand in the way of it.
He held out his arm in an old-fashioned gesture.
I put my fingers lightly on it and let him lead me back toward the bar. Just before we reached the entrance, though, he paused.
Don't take the wolves with you when you go after the sorcerer.
Why not?
That Fergus, he has served me for thrice times a score of years. In that time, he ne'er once raised a violent hand to a customer of mine. That demon the sorcerer bears carries violence like a stream carries little fishies. His very presence takes away all self-control and encourages raging and fighting. The effect of a demon on a werewolf is like vodka on a fire.
It sounded like Tony's recitation of the growing unrest the police were fighting. Bran had mentioned something like that too, but he hadn't made it sound as dire. Come to think of it, though Adam's outburst tonight might easily be explained by a combination of hot temper and worry, Samuel had been more volatile than usual lately. Why didn't you tell Adam that Warren and Ben were in danger? I asked.
I didn't know until that poor lad of his was laid on my doorstep today that Adam had sent his boyos out a-hunting, though I should have.
Had Bran known the danger when Adam sent Warren and Ben with Stefan? I thought about it. Probably, but Bran had never been one to tell his people what their limits were. Likely he'd been right, too. Worry and fear from knowing that the demon could eat away their control would do half the demon's work for it. I wouldn't tell them either, I decided, which meant that I couldn't tell them that I was going hunting. And whatever Marsilia had in mind, I was done with sitting around. Coyotes were good at skulking and could take down much bigger prey than most people would expect. If Marsilia could offer help, fine. If not, I'd go after him on my own. I entered the bar with Uncle Mike. There was a heavy metal band playing tonight, and the thrum of the drums and the distorted guitar made my head throb in time with the beat and sent my ears into overdrive. I know some wolves who love places like this, where their sensitive senses turn off for a while. They find it restful. Not me. It makes me jumpy, because I can't hear what's coming up behind me. Uncle Mike escorted me past the woman at the cover charge desk, and she gave him a surprised look, which he ignored. He bent down until his lips were near my ear and said,
"I have to go man the bar, but I'll keep an eye out for you while you're here."
I opened my mouth to thank him, but he touched his fingers to my mouth before I said anything.
"None of that, girl. I know Z has taught you better. Never thank a fae, or you'll be washing his socks and paying his rent before you can say effluvia 10 times.
He was right. I knew better, and possibly I'd have remembered before I said anything, but I appreciated his courtesy just the same. I raised my eyebrows and said with mock innocence, "But you wouldn't do that." He grinned appreciatively and waved me away.
"Go find your vampires, girl. I've money to make."
No one gave me any trouble, but I felt the weight of fae eyes on my back as I carefully moved through the crowd. It was hard not to bump people in a building as packed as this one was, but I kept Uncle Mike's warning in mind and kept my body parts to myself. The mood of the crowd was pretty ugly. My ears weren't doing me much good, but the emotions my nose picked up weren't happy ones. I found the vampires on the far side of the dance floor. Marsilia was in a 50s-style white dress that brought up images of Marilyn Monroe, though the vampire had none of her soft curves. Even in the dim light, her skin was too pale against the white of her dress. Someone should tell Marsilia that the style didn't flatter her. Maybe she'd tick me off enough to do it myself. My temper seemed to be on edge, too. Startled at that thought, I stopped where I was and turned in a slow circle, but I didn't see Littleton anywhere, or smell him either. I started toward the vampires again. Marsilia had brought only one escort, and I wasn't surprised to see it was Andre, Stefan's friend and rival. Weaving through the crowd gave me a little time to think on how to play my part. Marsilia knew she had me on her hook already. All that was left was to decide who was in charge. Since it was almost certainly going to be my skin at risk, I had an interest in making sure I had control of the hunt. I pulled the necklace I always wore out from under my t-shirt so they could get a good look at the stylized silver sheep as I approached. I don't wear a cross. As a child, I'd had a bad experience with one. Besides, a crucifix was the instrument of our Lord's death. I don't know why people think a torture device should be a symbol of Christ. Christ was a willing sacrifice, a lamb, not a cross for us to hang ourselves on. Or, at least that's my interpretation. Maybe other people think of religion and God differently than I do. Anyway, my little lamb works at least as well for me against Vamp as a cross is supposed to, and Marsilia knew it. When I walked up to the table, I smiled at them, showing my teeth. Then I took the chair they'd left me and spun it so I could sit on it backward with my arms folded across the top. In a wolf pack, a little attitude can save you a whole lot of bruises. I'd show no more weakness to these predators, I told myself. I wasn't in their territory now, and they had no power over me. Well, not unless I considered how much stronger they were and how much more practice they'd had at killing. So I tried not to consider it. At least the noise would keep them from hearing my heart beat like a rabbit's. So, I said, you want me to go hunt your vampire for you? Marsilia's face could hardly be any stiller, but Andre raised an eyebrow.
Sorcerer hunting, surely, he murmured.
Like Marsilia, he wore white. His natural skin color, though pale as all the vampires were for lack of sun, was just dark enough that the white looked good on him. His shirt was rich silk, cut in a vaguely oriental style with white-on-white embroidery. It looked better on him than his pirate shirts did. Hmm, I flashed another smile at Marsilia. But you need me because I'm a walker, and we're supposed to be good at killing vampires. And this sorcerer is exactly that, a vampire. Marsilia smiled back, the expression looking more human than anything I'd seen on her face. She was probably making an effort. She rolled the mostly empty glass in her hands, making the inky black liquid swirl. I don't know if Uncle Mike's served blood in wine glasses, but since all I smelled was various flavors of alcohol, I expected not. Since she was making such a show, though, I was pretty sure I was supposed to think it might be blood and be unnerved.
"Thank you for meeting me here," she said at last.
I shrugged and exaggerated just a little bit. I was going after it anyway. I realized only after I said it that it was the truth. "Since it's a vampire, though, having your approval for this hunt makes it," I pretended to search for a word, "safer for both of us." I was playing a dangerous game. If she really thought I was a danger to her seethe, she'd kill me. But if she didn't respect me, I was likely to end up just as dead. She sighed and set her glass on the table.
You were raised with the wolves, Mercedes, so I understand the need for playing dominance games. But two of mine are missing, and I fear for them. Stefan was among the strongest of mine, but the return of the remains of one of his companions tells me that he has failed.
All of her body language was just a little off. Perhaps she was really worried about her vampires, but her performance set my hackles up. To the wolves, body language is more important than words, and her body language was all wrong, sending messages that her voice did not. I couldn't tell which I should be listening to. "Remains is a little strong," I said. "Warren's not dead." She didn't say anything more for a moment, tapping the table lightly in the same pattern she'd used the last time I'd seen her. I thought that I hadn't reacted quite as she'd intended. Was I supposed to have accepted her help eagerly? Finally, she said,
"I know you think it is my fault for sending Stefan off by himself. There were reasons to make it appear a punishment, but Stefan was a soldier. He knew an assignment when he heard one. He knew I believed him, just as he knew I had no choice but to send him after this creature."
That I could believe.
"She meant for him to ask me for help," Andre broke in. "It is my fault that he didn't. Stefan and I have been friends for a long time, but I made a mistake and he was angry with me."
He looked at me and met my eyes for a moment, but looked away when I averted my gaze. I wondered what he would have done if I'd let him ensnare me. He continued as if nothing had happened. Maybe it hadn't.
"Daniel was one of Stefan's when he was human. He was more fragile than he appeared, and he died while he fed me. There is only an instant when the choice to bring one back can be made, Mercedes Thompson. Less than 5 human heartbeats. I thought to lessen the cost to everyone by bringing him back a vampire instead of putting him permanently to earth.
Marsilia touched his hand, and I realized his speech hadn't been for me, but for her.
You gave Daniel a gift, she said. Ample recompense for your mistake.
Andre bowed his head.
Stefan didn't think so. Bringing him over made Daniel mine, and Stefan was convinced that I'd done it on purpose.
The vampires were damned hard to read, but I thought Stefan probably had the right of it. Andre had been too pleased about something to do with Daniel and Stefan the night of Stefan's trial.
Unkind of him, Marsilia told him. I'd have given him back, Andre said, but I was waiting for Stefan to ask.
See? Vampires play stupid dominance games, too. Marsilia shook her head.
It was, perhaps, all to the good that Stefan did not take you. I might be here talking with this walker with both my best soldiers dead.
She turned her attention back to me.
So here is how I propose to make your job easier, Mercedes. I will lend you my left hand to guard your back, she said, nodding at Andre, my right being sundered, and I will give you what information I have.
In return for what? I asked, though my question was automatic. She thought Stefan was dead. She closed her eyes for a moment, then stared at my forehead. The vampire version of courtesy, I think. It made me feel like I had a smudge on my forehead. She said,
In return for you finding this bedamned thing, since it killed Stefan, I have to accept that any other vampire sent after it will likewise be destroyed. You are the best hope we have of eliminating it.
And besides, I added dryly, if I don't succeed, what have you lost? She didn't reply. But she didn't need to. So tell me, how do I kill this sorcerer?
Just like any other vampire, she said.
Most of what I know is from Dracula. Assume I'm totally ignorant, please.
Well enough, she agreed. A wooden stake through the heart works. Immersion in holy water or direct exposure to sunlight. It is said that the great saints could kill us with their faith. But I do not think, despite your lamb, she waved her hand at my necklace, that your faith is great enough for that. But take your little sheep with you, Mercedes, because it should work as well on demons as it does on vampires.
What was it that walkers could do that made vampires fear them? I asked. She and Andre both went very still. I didn't think she would answer me, but she did, sort of.
The first you already know, she said. Many of our powers do not work well on you. Most of our magic is useless.
Your truth spell worked, I pointed out.
That chair is not vampiric magic, Mercedes, not entirely. Though all magic, I believe, finds you difficult prey. But blood magic has a power all of its own, as do very old things. That chair is a very old thing.
I didn't mean to distract you from the subject, I said, politely inviting her to get back to the point. She gave me a faint smile.
No, I don't suppose you did. Walkers also speak to ghosts.
I blinked at her. So what? A lot of people, even otherwise perfectly normal humans, can speak to ghosts. She pushed back her chair.
I think that I have answered enough of your questions.
She gave Andre a look, so I knew that he wouldn't clarify anything for me.
I believe that you ought to start by finding out where Stefan went last night.
Warren won't be talking, not for a while, I told her. His throat had been crushed. Samuel thought it could take several days to heal.
Stefan was in the habit of talking with his people, she told me. They are afraid. They won't talk to me or mine, but I think they will talk to you. Andre will take you to Stefan's house where you can speak with the menagerie.
Then she disappeared. I suppose she could have cloaked herself in shadows, as some of the Fae can, but I couldn't smell her, couldn't sense her anywhere.
I hate it when she does that, said Andre, taking a sip out of his glass. Mostly envy, I expect. Stefan could do it too. the only one of her get to receive that gift.
I stayed silent a while, contemplating Marsilia. She'd been making an effort to be human tonight, though she'd only been moderately successful. Tentatively, I decided that she'd been mostly honest about what she wanted from me and why. I was pretty sure that she thought I held the key to finding this sorcerer, either through my resistance to vampire magic or through my ability to speak to ghosts. It wasn't like I saw ghosts all the time or anything. I was already a freak, a shapeshifter not tied to the moon who turned into a coyote, neither human nor werewolf or fae. I didn't like thinking I might be even odder than I'd thought. I looked up to see Andre watching me patiently. To my werewolf-accustomed eyes, he didn't look like someone who was one of Marsilia's most capable warriors. There was no width in his shoulders, no substance to his muscles. She could have been flattering him since he was in the room, but I didn't think so. "Did she teleport?" I asked. I'd been told that will-o'-wisps were the only creature who could really teleport. He smiled and shrugged.
"I don't know how it is done, but it is one of the reasons we are certain Stefan is gone. If he were still with us, he could not be easily imprisoned."
"You don't sound upset," I said. I didn't want to think about Stefan being dead, permanently dead, I mean. He gave me a shrug that might have meant anything.
"I think Stefan is gone, Mercedes Thompson. I wear the white to honor him, as does the mistress. But there is nothing I can do about his death, except hunt his killer."
He paused and set his glass down very gently.
"We do not know each other well enough for me to cry on your shoulder."
The shadow of anger in his voice made me like him better. "All right," I said. "Why don't you show me how to find Stefan's house?" We'd made it halfway to the door when the crowd quit letting us through. Andre was quicker than I was. He stopped where he was while I tried sliding around a particularly sizable woman who was standing in front of me.
"Hold up, ducks," she said in a voice that was low enough to vibrate my sinuses. "I smell a human in a fey tavern."
On the tail of her words, the music stopped, and the sounds of people talking and moving died down. Once I realized she was talking about me, though she spoke to the room at large, I thought of several clever but stupid remarks about her sense of smell. I wasn't human at all, not in the sense she meant. Stupid, because only a very unwise person jumps up and down shouting on top of a beehive. Sometimes, when one of them have committed a terrible crime, the whole wolf pack enjoins in the punishment, tearing the violating wolf to bits. But before it starts, there is a moment of oppressive stillness when the culprit is alone, surrounded by the pack. Then one wolf moves and starts the feeding frenzy. This crowd had that feel, as if they were waiting for someone to start something. "I have Uncle Mike's permission to be here," I said softly, giving no challenge. I didn't know what kind of fae she was, what to do to avoid a fight. She opened her mouth, obviously unappeased, when someone shouted, "A forfeit!" I thought the shout might have originated at the bar, but it was immediately taken up by a throng of voices. When they quieted, the woman in front of me looked around and asked the room at large,
"What kind of a forfeit, then, ducks?"
Forfeit, I thought. Some kind of gift, maybe. Or sacrifice. Uncle Mike pushed forward through the crowd until he stood in front of me, his face thoughtful. It was a sign of his power that they all waited for his judgment.
"Music," he said at last. "My guest will offer us a gift of music for our hospitality."
The big woman sighed as Uncle Mike stepped back and swept the fae near him away until I could clearly see the small stage where three musicians still stood. There were two guitarists and a string bass. I don't know where the sounds of drums had come from, because there were none in evidence. One of the guitarists grinned, hopped off the stage, and motioned to the others to do likewise, leaving the platform to me. I lifted my eyebrow at Uncle Mike and began walking to the stage. Andre, I'd noticed, had drawn back in the crowd. They wouldn't bother him, not a vampire. Neither would they have bothered one of the werewolves. I, who was neither werewolf nor vampire, was fair game. I wondered if Uncle Mike would have let them tear me to bits if he hadn't been aware that, pack or not, the wolves would avenge me. Fat lot of good vengeance would have done me. Uncle Mike's suspect help was of more use. When I stepped onto the stage, one of the guitarists tried to hand me his instrument with a flourish. "I appreciate the gesture," I told him carefully, "but I don't play." I didn't play anything except piano, and that very poorly. I was just lucky that the piano lessons had included voice lessons, too. I looked around for inspiration. The obvious answer was to pick a Celtic song, but I rejected it as fast as it came to mind. Folk songs, for the most part, have dozens of variations and dozens of people claiming that their version was true. In a group of mostly Celtic fae who were looking for a reason to kill me, singing a Celtic song would be stupid. There were a few German fae here, and the Germans were not nearly as picky about their music, but the only German song I knew was O Tannenbaum, a children's Christmas carol that wouldn't impress anyone. Not that my voice was going to impress anyone anyway. I had pitch and volume, but no real talent. Which made the choice of song very important. We played a game, and if I cowered too much, not even Uncle Mike could save my skin. A subtle insult would be best, not a slap in the face, but a poke in the side. I also needed a power song, because my voice isn't pretty and soft. Something that sounded good a cappella. Despite the air conditioning, the room was stifling hot, and my thoughts felt sluggish. Of course, that might have been the fear. I wished it was winter, and the air was cool and crisp. Maybe it was that. Maybe it was the lingering thought about O Tannenbaum, but I knew what I was going to sing. I felt my lips curl up. I took a deep breath, properly supported with my diaphragm, and began singing. Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. So in the sweltering heat of a July night, I sang a Christmas carol to a room full of fae who had been driven out of their homelands by Christians and their cold iron swords. I've heard that song sung softly, until the magic of that first Christmas seems to hang in the air. I wish I could sing it that way. Instead, I belted it out, because that's what my voice does best. I close my eyes to my audience and let the simple belief of the words run through me like a prayer, until I got to fall on your knees. Then I opened my eyes and glared at the woman who had started all of this, and I sang the rest of the song at her. When the last note died away, the big woman threw back her head and laughed. She turned to Uncle Mike and patted him on the shoulder, sending him half a step forward.
"Good forfeit," she said. "Huh!"
Then she stomped off back through the crowd toward a corner of the room. If I'd been expecting applause, I'd have been disappointed. The room settled down and the fae went back to doing whatever they'd been doing before I'd become so interesting. Still, it hadn't been any worse than singing at the Friday night performance in front of Bran at Aspen Springs. One of the musicians, the one who'd offered his guitar, grinned at me as we switched places.
"A little thin on the highest notes," he said, "but not bad."
I grinned back at him a little ruefully. "Tough crowd."
"You're still alive, Dax, aren't you then?" he said, imitating the cadences of the woman's voice.
I gave him a half wave and made a direct line for the exit. I didn't see Andre, but Uncle Mike met me at the door and held it open for me. Standing on the porch, I caught the door and looked back at him. "How did you know I could even carry a note?" He smiled.
"You were raised by a Welshman, Mercedes Thompson. And isn't that a Welsh name, Thompson? Then, too, one of the names for the coyote is the prairie songbird." He shrugged. "Of course, it wasn't my life on the line."
I snorted in appreciation. He touched a finger to his forehead and closed the door firmly between us. Chapter 9. Andre was waiting for me in the parking lot, standing beside one of the Seed's interchangeable black Mercedes, ready to drive me to Stefan's home, as if I were stupid enough to hop into a car driven by a vampire I didn't know. Despite Andre's objections, I followed him in my car rather than letting him drive me. Aside from being safer, when we were done, I could drive straight home instead of waiting for him to drive me back out to Uncle Mike's. He was right. It might have been useful to talk and come up with a game plan, if I had trusted him a little more, or if I hadn't had to go to work in the morning. Bills don't wait just because my friend was cut to hamburger and the vampire's mistress wants me to find a sorcerer who has killed more than 40 people. I took a tighter grip on the wheel and tried not to look at the broken dash where Stefan, calm, quiet Stefan, had put his fist. What had made him so angry? That the sorcerer had beaten him? What had Stefan said? That he knew there was something wrong with his memories because he hadn't remembered me, that I was not unimportant to him. Stefan was a vampire, I reminded myself. Vampires are evil. I reached out and touched the dash. He did it because I had been hurt, I thought. He wasn't unimportant to me either. I didn't want him to be gone forever. Stefan's house was in the hills of Kennewick, in one of the newer subdivisions on the west side of Highway 395. It was a big, sprawling brick house on a large lot with a circular drive, the kind of house that should have generations of children growing up in it. Surrounded by buildings with fake columns and two-story high windows, it should have looked out of place. Instead, it looked content with what it was. I could see Stefan in this house.
"You'd better knock on the door," Andre said as I got out of my car. "They've already refused to admit me once tonight, with every justification. Stefan might forgive me, Daniel, but his flock will remember."
He sounded mildly regretful, about on the level of a child who'd thrown a baseball through a window. Despite the late hour, there were lights on all over the house. When I thought about it, it made sense that a vampire's people kept late hours. Coming here, it sounded logical when Marsilia had directed us here. I hadn't really thought about what it would mean. I hesitated before I knocked. I didn't want to meet Stefan's people, didn't want to know that he kept them the way a farmer keeps a herd of cattle. I liked Stefan, and I wanted to keep it that way. The curtain in the window next to the door moved a little. They already knew we were here. I rang the doorbell. I heard a scramble behind the door, as if a lot of people were moving around, but when it opened, there was only one person in the entryway. She looked to be a few years older than me, in her mid to late 30s. She wore her dark, curly hair cut to shoulder length. She was dressed conservatively in a tailored shirt and slacks. She looked like a businesswoman. I think she might have been attractive, but her eyes and nose were swollen and red, her face too pale. She stood back, in silent invitation. I walked in, but Andre came to an abrupt halt just outside the threshold.
"You'll have to invite me in again, Naomi," he said.
She drew in a shaky breath.
"No, not until he returns."
She looked at me.
"Who are you, and what do you want?"
"My name is Mercedes Thompson," I told her. "I'm trying to find out what happened to Stefan." She nodded her head, and without another word to Andre, shut the door in his face.
"Mercedes Thompson," she said. "Stefan liked you, I know. You stood up for him before the other vampires, and when you believed he was in trouble, you called us."
She glanced back at the door.
"Stefan revoked Andre's entry into the house, but I wasn't certain that it still worked with Stefan missing."
She looked at the door a moment, then turned to me with a visible effort at composure. Control sat more comfortably on her face than fear.
"What can I do to help you, Ms. Thompson?"
"You don't sound like the kind of person who would..." There was doubtlessly a polite term for someone who willingly feeds a vampire, but I didn't know it.
"What did you expect?" she asked tartly. "Pale children covered with tattoos and bite marks?"
I said. "I met Daniel." Her expressive eyes clouded.
"Ah, Daniel, yes. And we have a couple more like him. So, the stereotype is present here, but not all-encompassing. If you went to another vampire's flock, you might find it more like you expected. Stefan is seldom typical of anything."
She took a deep breath.
"Why don't you come into the kitchen, and I'll pour you some tea while you ask your questions."
There were at least 10 people besides Stefan living in the house. I could smell them. They kept out of sight while Naomi led me to the kitchen, but I could hear someone whispering nearby. Politely, I didn't stick my head into the room the whispers were coming from. A butcher block table that wouldn't have fit in most of the rooms in my trailer held sway in the center of the kitchen.
Naomi pulled out a tall stool and sat down, motioning for me to take a seat as well. As she did, her hair fell away from the unblemished skin of her neck. She saw my glance and pulled her hair back so I could see that there were no red marks.
"Satisfied?" she asked.
I took a deep breath. She wanted me uncomfortable, but the adrenaline rush from Uncle Mike's was gone, and I was just tired. I pushed back my own hair and turned so she could see the bite marks on my neck. They were mostly healed, so I'd quit wearing a bandage, but the skin was still red and shiny. I'd probably have a scar. She sucked in her breath and leaned forward to touch my neck.
"Stefan never did that," she said, but with rather less conviction in her tone of voice than in her words.
"Why do you say that?" I asked.
"Someone just gnawed on you," she said. "Stefan has more care."
I nodded. "This was done by the thing that Stefan went hunting."
She relaxed. "That's right. He'd said it attacked you."
Stefan talked to her. A hopeful sign. "Yes." I pulled out a second stool and climbed aboard. "Do you know where Stefan went last night?"
She shook her head. "I asked. He wouldn't tell me. He said he didn't want us chasing after him if he didn't come home."
"He was worried about you?" "Yes, but not the way you think," said a new voice behind me.
I looked over and saw a young woman in baggy clothes and long straight hair. She didn't look at us, just opened the fridge and studied the contents.
"How so?" I asked.
She looked up and grimaced at Naomi.
"He was worried that she would get the rest of us killed trying to rescue him. See, if he dies, so does she. Not immediately, but soon."
"That's not why I'm worried," Naomi lied. I could hear it in her voice.
"See, the professor here has leukemia."
The younger girl took out a quart of milk and drank out of the carton.
"As long as she's playing blood bank, Stefan's return donations keep her cancer in check. If he quits..."
She made a choking, gasping sound, then gave Naomi a faint, pleased look.
"In return, she acts as Stefan's business manager, paying bills, doing the taxes, shopping. Hey, Naomi, we're out of cheese."
She replaced the carton and shut the fridge. Naomi slid off her chair and faced the younger girl. "If he is dead, that means no more free ride for you. Maybe you should go back to your mother and her new husband, at least until the mistress finds you and gives you to another vampire. Maybe Andre would want you." The teenager just stared at her, her gaze coolly mocking. Naomi turned to me and said, "She doesn't know any more than I do." She glared at the girl one more time, then stalked off. The girl had come out the clear winner in their engagement. I found myself thinking she'd make a good wolf.
"I'm Mercedes Thompson," I said, turning on the stool so I could put my elbows on the butcher block table and lean back in a non-threatening manner. "I'm looking for Stefan."
She glanced around as if looking for him, too.
"Yeah, well, he ain't here."
I nodded my head and pursed my lips.
"I know. One of the wolves he was with last night was returned to us in very bad shape."
She raised her chin.
"You aren't a werewolf, Stefan said."
"No," I agreed.
"Anything that could take out Stefan could wipe the floor with old Andre out there."
She jerked her chin toward the front door.
"What makes you think you can help Stefan?" "Marsilia believes I can."
I watched the impact of the name hit her. For a moment, even with the veil of dark hair that covered her face, I caught a glimpse of the fear that rose from the depths of the house. Everyone here was very afraid. The house reeked of it.
"If Stefan doesn't come back,"
she told me very quietly, suddenly sounding much older, "I think we're all dead, not just Dr. Tightbridges.
Sooner or later, we're all gone. The mistress won't want us free to blabber about them, so she'll farm us out to the rest of her vampires, put us in their menageries. Most of them aren't as careful with their food as Stefan. No control when they're hungry."
I didn't know what to say that didn't sound like a platitude, so I picked a thread out of her speech and plucked it. "Stefan keeps you alive longer than the others are able to?"
"He doesn't kill those of us in his menagerie," she said.
I remembered that the London Zoo had once been known as a menagerie. She shrugged with studied casualness.
"Mostly, anyway. When he gets us, we have to stay a couple of years. But after that, except for Naomi...
And that's hardly Stefan's fault either. We're free to go.
Why a couple of years? I asked. She gave me a how stupid are you look.
It takes that long for him to establish enough of a connection to make sure we won't go telling anyone we meet about vampires.
How long have you been with Stefan?
5 years this August,
she said, though she couldn't be over 20. I hid my shock, but not well enough because she smirked at me.
12. I was 12. Stefan's a big step up from my folks, let me tell you.
Vampires are evil. Funny how I kept trying to forget that about Stefan. You probably know more about vampires than I do, I told her, changing my tack so I could get a little more information. I grew up with the werewolves, and even though I've known Stefan a long time, most of our conversations are about cars. Would you mind if I asked you a few questions?
What do you want to know?
How much do you know about the thing that he was hunting?
He doesn't talk to us much, she told me. Not like he used to talk to Daniel. He said it was a vampire demon thingy.
I nodded. Close enough. Apparently, if I can kill the vampire, the demon will just go away. No more vampire demon thingy. Marsilia told me how to kill vampires. I stopped speaking and let her think about that a minute. She was pretty bright. It didn't take her long to come to the same conclusion I had.
Man, that's pretty scary, going into a battle with the mistress as your intel. Sure, I'll tell you what you need to know.
She ran her eyes over me and was unimpressed.
She really thinks you can kill this thing?
I started to nod, then stopped. I have no idea what Marsilia thinks. Uncle Mike hadn't thought me hunting the sorcerer was stupid. I wasn't sure if I should trust the Fae any further than I trusted the vampire. I shrugged, finally, and told her the truth.
I don't really care. I'll kill the sorcerer or die trying. What did she tell you?
She said I could kill a vampire with a wooden stake through the heart, holy water, or sunlight. She leaned a hip against the fridge and shook her head.
Look, the wooden stake thing works, but it's better if it's oak, ash, or yew. And if you kill them that way, you have to cut off their heads or burn the body to make sure they stay dead. Remember, a dead vampire is ashes. If there's a body, it'll come back, and it'll come back angry with you. Cutting off their heads is pretty good, but difficult. They're not likely to stand around and wait for the chainsaw. Sunlight's good, too, but the stake and sunlight, they're like kicking a guy in the balls, you know?
I shook my head, fascinated.
They all know about it. They're not going to put themselves at risk if they can help it. And if you screw it up, all it does is piss them off more. Holy water's mostly out. You'd need a whole swimming pool full of holy water to kill one.
So how would you kill a vampire permanently? She pursed her lips.
Fire's best. Stefan says they burn pretty well once they get started.
Stefan told you all of this? I tried to imagine the conversation. She nodded.
Sure.
She gave me a considering look.
Look, I don't know where he went, but I know he was keeping a sharp eye out on the local news and the papers. He had a map of the cities, and he marked where there was violence. Yesterday, he was pretty excited about something he'd noticed about the pattern.
Do you have the map? I asked.
No, he took it with him, and he didn't show it to any of us.
I slid off the chair. Thank you,
Rachel. Thank you, Rachel.
She nodded her head and then opened the fridge again, dismissing me. I walked to the front door slowly, but no one else appeared, so I let myself out. Andre was waiting for me, sitting on the hood of his car. He jumped off and asked,
"Did they know anything?"
I shrugged. They didn't know where he was, but I found out how he decided where to look. Maybe it'll help. I looked at Andre and wondered if Marsilia had left out the part about decapitating the staked vampire on purpose. It didn't take much thought for me to decide she had. "How would you kill Littleton?" I asked him.
"Fire," he said promptly. "That's the easiest way. Staking works, but you have to decapitate them afterwards."
It didn't mean anything. From my question, he'd have known I'd asked Stefan's people. "That's not what Marsilia told me." He gave me a faint smile.
"If you just staked him, she could capture him, make him hers. There aren't a lot of vampires, Mercy, and it takes a long time to make them. If Daniel hadn't belonged to Stefan for so long, he'd have died permanently. Marsilia doesn't want to waste a vampire, especially not one who has all the powers of a demon at his touch. If he is hurt badly enough, there are ways of bringing him back under the control of a more powerful vampire, like Marsilia. He would make her position unassailable.
So you intend to capture him?
Andre shook his head.
I want the bastard dead. Permanently dead.
Why is that?
I told you. Stefan and I, we have been friends for a very long time.
He turned his face into the light that illuminated the driveway.
We have our differences, but it is like family squabbling. I know this time Stefan was really angry, but he'd have gotten over it. Because of this sorcerer, I will never get the chance to make peace with him.
You are so certain Stefan is gone?
Stefan's VW bus was parked off to the side of the garage, covered by a tarp to protect its unusual paint job. What kind of vampire drove an old bus painted like the Mystery Machine? Last Christmas, I'd gotten him a life-size Scooby-Doo to ride in the passenger seat. He must have heard the answer I wanted in my voice, because he shook his head slowly at me.
Mercedes, it is difficult to keep a human captive. It is almost impossible to imprison a vampire.
Stefan has ways. I don't think that he could be imprisoned, yet he has not come home.
Yes, I think he is gone. I will do everything I can to see that this Littleton follows him.
They made too much sense, he and Adam. I had to believe that Stefan was gone, and Ben and the young vampire I'd only met the once were dead as well. If I wasn't going to cry in front of him, I had to leave really soon. I glanced at my watch. I have to be up in 3 hours. If I knew how long it was going to take us to find the sorcerer, I'd have had Z take over the shop, but I couldn't afford to do that for more than a few days a month, not and keep up on the mortgage and food.
Go home and go to bed.
He took out a slim leather case and withdrew a card, handing it to me.
My cell number is on this. Call me tomorrow at dusk, and we can discuss where to go from here.
I tucked the card in my back pocket. We'd stopped at the door to my car, so I opened it and started to sit down, when I thought of another question.
Stefan said that Littleton was new. Does that mean there's another vampire controlling him?
Andre inclined his head.
A new vampire is under the control of his maker.
He gave me a smile that was faintly bitter.
It's not willing service. We all have to obey our maker.
Even you?
He gave a short, unhappy bow.
Even I. As we get older and accumulate power, though, the control diminishes, or when our makers die.
So Littleton is obeying another vampire?
If the vampire who made him isn't dead, he should have to obey him.
Who was Stefan's maker?
Marsilia. But Stefan never had to play slave as the rest of us did.
There was sheer envy in his voice as he said,
He was never in a thrall. It happens sometimes, but such vampires are always killed upon their first rising. Any other vampire would have killed Stefan as soon as it was apparent that he wasn't under their control. But Marsilia was in love. He gave her an oath of obedience, though, and to my certain knowledge, he never broke it.
He looked out at the night sky. Abruptly, he shut my door.
Go home and go to sleep while you still can.
Did Marsilia make you too?
I asked, turning the key in the ignition.
Yes.
Damn it, I thought. This was so stupid. I didn't know anything about vampires, and I was going to bring down one who had taken out 2 vampires and a pair of werewolves. I might as well shoot myself in the head right now. It would save time and effort.
Good night, Andre,
I told him, and drove out of Stefan's driveway. I was tired enough to sleep as soon as my head hit the pillow. I dreamed of Stefan's poor menagerie, doomed, if Rachel was to be believed, by Stefan's death. I dreamed of Stefan driving his bus with that silly stuffed Scooby-Doo perched in the passenger seat. I dreamed he tried to tell me something, but I couldn't hear it over the noise.
I rolled over and buried my head under the pillow. But the noise continued. It wasn't my alarm. I could go back to sleep. I was tired enough that even dreaming of dead people was preferable to being awake. After all, Stefan was as dead and gone when I was awake as when I was sleeping. It wasn't a really loud sound. If it had been less irregular, I think I could have ignored it. Scritch. Scritch, scritch. It was coming from my window near the bed. It sounded like the rose bush that had grown outside of the window of my mother's home in Portland. Sometimes it would brush against the house at night and scare me. I wasn't 16 anymore. There was no one but me who could get up, go outside, and move whatever it was so I could go to sleep. I pulled the pillow tighter over my ears, but there was no blocking the noise. Then I thought, Stefan? In an instant, I was fully awake. I threw the pillow on the floor, sat up in a rush, and turned to press my face up against the window and look out. But there was someone's face already pressed up against the window, someone who wasn't Stefan. Gleaming, iridescent eyes stared at me through the glass not 6 inches from my own. I shrieked Samuel's name and jumped out of bed, away from the window. It wasn't until I was crouched and shaking in the center of my bedroom floor before I remembered that Samuel was still over at Adam's. The face didn't move. He'd pressed so hard against the glass his nose and lips were distorted, though I had no trouble recognizing Littleton. He licked the glass, then tilted his head and made the sound that had drawn me from my sleep. His fang left a white mark as he scored the glass with it. There were a lot of little white marks, I noticed. He'd been there for a long time, watching me as I slept. It gave me the creeps, as did the realization that unless he was very, very tall, he was hanging in the air. All my guns were locked in the stupid safe. There was no way I could get to them before he could burst through the window. Not that I was sure a gun would have any effect on a vampire anyway. It took me a long time to remember that he couldn't get into my home without an invitation. Somehow that belief wasn't as reassuring as it ought to have been, with him staring at me through a thin pane of glass. Abruptly, he pulled away from the window and dropped out of sight. I listened, but I couldn't hear anything. After a long while, I accepted that he was gone. I wasn't going to be able to sleep on that bed, though. Not unless I pulled it away from the window. My head was throbbing from lack of sleep, and I staggered into the bathroom and got out some aspirin and gulped them down. I stared at myself in the mirror, looking pale and colorless in the darkness. "Well," I said, "now you know where he is. Why aren't you out tracking him?" I sneered at my cowardly face, but some of the effect was lost in the darkness, so I reached over and flipped the light switch. Nothing happened. I flipped it twice more. Stupid trailer. The breakers often switched off on their own. Someday I was going to have to rewire the trailer. The breaker box was on the other side of the trailer, past the big windows in the living room and the smaller one in the kitchen. The one in the kitchen didn't have a curtain. "Fearless vampire hunter, my aching butt," I muttered, knowing I was too thoroughly spooked to go and reset the breaker unarmed. Stalking out of the bathroom, I opened the gun safe. I left the pistols in favor of the Marlin 444 rifle, which I loaded with silver, though I didn't know if the silver would do any more harm to a vampire than regular lead. They certainly wouldn't do less. At any rate, the Marlin would give me enough confidence to go back to sleep. I shoved the finger-long bullets into the gun impatiently. If those things could stop an elephant, I had to believe they'd make a vampire sit up and take notice, too. I knew I shouldn't turn on the bedroom light. In the unlikely event that Littleton was still here, it would ruin my night vision, and it would silhouette me in the light, making me a good target if Littleton the vampire and sorcerer decided to use a gun. Unlikely, considering how much he'd enjoyed killing that poor maid slowly. I wasn't enough of a threat to deprive him of that much fun. I hit the bedroom switch next to the bathroom door anyway. Nothing happened. The bedroom and the bathroom were on different circuits. They couldn't both be thrown at the same time. Had Littleton cut the power to the trailer? I was still staring at the switch when someone screamed Samuel's name. No, it wasn't just anyone screaming. It was me. Except that I hadn't screamed again. I jacked a shell into the marlin and tried to take comfort from its familiar weight and the knowledge that Littleton couldn't come in.
Little wolf, let me come in.
The whisper filled my room. I couldn't tell where it was coming from. Breathing hard through my nose to control my panic, I knelt on the bed and looked cautiously out the window.